Well, let me just tell you, let me give you this. Most people build their business reactively. Most people don't even know who their customers are. First thing you have to do is know who your customers are. And I don't mean just abstractly and demographically. You got to know them by name, by address, by phone number, by location, by interest in buying habits. Then you got to know what group most probably parallels that. Then you got to know where those people are. You got to know where your customers are, where your prospects are. That's the first thing, and most people don't have that. When you know what they are, then you've got to direct them, and you've got to continuously ethically program them. You've got to communicate with them frequently and direct them to bigger, better, continuous buying transactions by calling them, by writing them, by visiting them, and by advancing and demonstrating to them why it's to their best interest, not yours, for them to buy more, for them to buy more often, for them to buy other components of products and services you sell, because their life or their business or their situation or their well-being will be enhanced, protected, or improved because of it.
Okay, go ahead with your list. I just wanted to hear a little of that.
Most people are promiscuous and self-destructive to almost a dangerous level. They don't realize that most things they do have a 90% failure rate. I try to get people to do things that only have a 90% success rate by teaching them ways to hedge their downside, to improve their upside, to pre-validate or pre-test the market's interest in something before they go full bore with it. If you do that, you can afford to try a lot of things, and if you have losses, you're going to lose ever so small, but when you have wins, they're going to be so big that they're going to be windfalls. I teach people a different way of looking at business success, and maybe we'll do a whole interview on that because it's about a 90-minute process, Marty.
Okay.
I teach people that it's limiting to have a single source of profit revenue. You've got to have multiple profit centers. Everything you do can be done multiple different ways. For example, when I do a training program, and again, this could be a whole interview too if you want. When I do a training program, we take the three ways you grow a business, and there are only three ways. You increase the number of customers, you increase the unit of sale, you increase the frequency of transaction. We go through each category and we find the 30 or 40 different ways you can do that. Let's say increasing the number of customers, the first way might be referrals. It isn't necessary, but that is a way. I'll interview 25 people in the audience and find that what you think is a referral method may be totally different than what somebody else thinks the referral method is. Mm-hmm. There may be 30 different ways to do referrals. Well, the first thing I do is get people to identify what the highest and best result way would be for them in their situation. And each person's situation is different, so you may have a better way to do something than I do, and it's more applicable to you or more appropriate for you to do it one way than me. But oftentimes, you can have five different referral systems in place instead of just one. And its cumulative effect will not be five times greater yield. It'll be like 25 times because it has geometric and catalytic impact. So I'll teach people to identify all the different ways they can do one generic premise. Selling. You can sell your product full boat. You can sell your product on a sample. You can sell a small version of it. You can sell a booklet first. You can give a booklet. You can let people come first to a demonstration. You can let them try it out. There's about 100 different ways to do it. The first thing you have to do is explore and identify the whole scope of possibilities to identify on certainly the best way to do it for you. Then you should think about doing multiple ways at the same time because it broadens the appeal, because different people, Marty, will respond to different hot buttons. Some people may not be ready to buy a product, but they would be ready to try it out for a few days. Some people are not ready to even try it out, but they would be ready to watch a video or listen to a tape or be visited or talk on the phone to other people who have used it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I get people to first and foremost agree they have to develop multiple profit centers. They should have not one, but perhaps 21 different ways they are doing something, and in every one of those ways there are probably five permutations they could be doing it, and those give them profound leverage.
Can you amplify that just a little, the five different ways?
Well, I'll give you an example. When it comes to building a business, like how many ways can you generate customers? Well, there's a lot of ways. You can run ads. You can do telemarketing. You can do special promotions. You can do joint ventures. You can do referral programs. Within each one of those, I can give you five or six different permutations, and I'll be glad. I mean, I'd rather give people a macro overview, and maybe on subsequent tapes take them down deeper, because I think each one of these could be a full interview.
Yeah, go ahead, because our time is drawing to close here. So.
Okay. So being different, I try to get every customer, everyone who comes to me and they lament that there's no distinction. I teach them how to have distinction, how to give themselves preemption. And preemption is getting the customer to see them different. You get preemption by many different ways. One is you give the customers a dimensionalized explanation of the way you go about performing your product or service or rendering it, about the construction elements that go into it, about the training that goes into it, about the backing and the organizations behind it. You dimensionalize the way you do something or the way you go about buying the product and how many different vendors you look at and reject and what your standards are, so that it'll get greater dimension and personality and distinction and differentiation into it. Another way you do it is you add to the transaction other products or services that make your product different and distinctive. If everybody else is selling a widget for $1,000, and you can add to your product a widget with two or three other components that make the product perform better or complement it or avoid the customer having to buy another part of the process, and it costs a nominal amount because you can buy so many of them so cheap, you can add to it. You've just created an incomparable proprietary by making everyone else be a commodity and adding to the deal. If everyone else is selling a widget for $1,000, but you're selling for $950 the widget with the service attached and the components and the attachments all total, it's incredible. Case in point, years and years and years ago, before computers were bundled, a guy named Osborne came out with the Osborne computer. Do you remember that?
I remember.
Well, in the past, you had to buy the computer, then you had to buy the screen, and you had to buy the software, and you had to buy the printer, and he put together a package where you got a turnkey. You got the printer, you got the screen, you got the software, you got the computer, all for less than the price of the computer, and he sold like $30 million in one fell swoop. You try to package, because packaging makes you different. Everyone's got to be different in a positive way. If you're not different, you have no advantage. You have no advantage, you're just lucky you're still in business, because there's no distinguishing basis that makes you stand out in an advantageous manner. I teach people how to create value for their customers. That's the key, the overlooked ingredient, the secret. The more value you create and contribute, the more advantage you bring that the customer understands, realizes, desires, and appreciates, the more they are indelibly committed to you. I teach people that they got to get leverage on themselves. There are many different ways to do something. They all take the same time. They all take the same effort. They all take the same amount of capital or human capital. One can produce three or four times the yield of the other. You got to know and evaluate what all the options are first before you can choose the right option. If you have allowed yourself to just do what has been convenient, or what you've learned from your industry, like the roast beef example of earlier, you're denying your company, yourself, your family, your employees so much more prosperity you could be getting out of the same effort. Mm-hmm. I teach people to network, and by that I mean pick the minds of people outside of your field who've already incorporated, encompassed, and embraced the problems, the opportunities, the challenges, the issues you are, and have had to overcome them in different ways. Learn what they've learned, because it'll save years, it'll save anguish, it'll save time. Go outside of your business on a regular basis. Pick people's minds. Share your issues. Learn about them. Tell them about you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
How are we doing on time?
Well, we have about maybe 10 minutes left. You know one word that I have picked up on you using so often, and I know it's key to your thinking, and that is the word proprietary. I kind of feel like I could say, be proprietary. And that would summarize what you're saying to us.
Well, proprietary to me is a very critical word. The world is forcing people, or trying to force people, to become a commodity. We're in a world where everything is the same, homogenized, incomparable product or service. Most people are abdicating and allowing that to happen. People I advise never let that happen. They stand strong and tall, and they sink their feet deeply in the ground, and they decide from this point forward they're going to be a proprietary. They're going to be unique. They're going to approach their customer in a business way that's so different, incomparable, that there's no comparison possible. They're going to do things and present things and package things and promise things and deliver things and guarantee things in a way that none of their competitors have ever done and probably are willing to do, and so they're going to stand out so much more favorably in the eyes of their customer. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It applies across the board, including people trying to get jobs, including people trying to raise money, including people trying to make joint ventures, including people trying to sell customers, including people trying to sell themselves. We're all products. We're all companies selling ourselves as a product. You're trying to sell your competency to your employer. You're trying to sell your opportunity to your employees. You're trying to sell your love to your spouse or your girlfriend or boyfriend. You're trying to sell your wisdom and your knowledge to your children. These same tenets apply across the board, Marty.
Have you kept a total count of your clients over the years? I mean,
I know I've impacted about 10,000 companies directly or indirectly in groups or privately. I mean, I do hundreds of private consultations a year. I do thousands of people in groups. I have a dozen or so larger ongoing advisory clients. You know, I'll probably do pro bono for 50 or 60 people who I take compassion or pity upon. So, I mean, I never keep track of it. It's basically a lot.
Oh, okay. Let me ask you just in the few minutes we have left here, because those of us listening to your tape here want to change, want to incorporate these ideas into our lives and into our careers. Can you give us 10 reasons why it's possible to change and get the wizard's edge, become like Jay Abraham?
I'm not sure. I've never thought of it like that, but I can give you some reasons it's much more prudent, and it's much more joyous, and it's much more simple, and it's much more easy. Okay, I'm going to give you a philosophy. Okay?
Please.
Philosophy is this. We all have within us the same amount of time, the same amount of opportunities. We're put on this earth with a chance to do so much good, so much productivity, construct, create, impact, achieve. How much we accomplish, how much we get out has to do with how much we give. How much we give has to do with how much we utilize the leverage opportunities available to us. A life partially lived, whether it's a business life, whether it's a career, whether it's a personal relationship, partially lived seems to me to be tragic. You have this wonderful opportunity. You owe it to yourself to get the most you can out of everything you've got, every opportunity presents itself, every hour you spend, every person you impact or interact with, every transaction you engage in. It's a philosophy. You can discover so many easier and better ways to do something that can give you greater yield now and greater yield in the future. If those are so readily available, and you don't have to recreate the wheel, but you can discover them from learning from others and incorporating them and combination them into your business, and the same effort can produce multiples of what you're doing, and those multiples mean a higher lifestyle, more cash flow, more borrowing power, greater value to the business, greater ability to live the comfortable life, the chance to retire either at a higher level or retire earlier. Why would you not want to do that? You have to grow your mind. I mean, the truth of the matter is there's an adage in life that says grow or die, but the truth of the matter, if you look at any organism, you're an organism as a human being, you're an organism as a business. If you do not progress, you ultimately regress. If you continue doing what you're doing now, it's only a matter of time before it stops working. It's only a matter of time before it starts regressing. When it starts regressing, taking and turning yourself out of a tailspin is very difficult. You've got to be proactive. Proactive most people in life allow their fate to be manipulated by the system, by competition, by the marketplace. I find that to be very, very, very limiting. I would not like the rest of my life to be maneuvered, manipulated, and controlled by other people when I know that I have absolute control of my destiny the moment I wish to take it. You take it by being proactive. You take it by learning all the options. You take it by maximizing and optimizing, not by minimizing. You take it by agreeing to yourself that you owe it to yourself, your business, and your life investment to learn how to get the maximum you can out of everything you do. Oh, that's pretty much it.
Okay, I would guess that your life has to be a full not only because of the financial benefits that you have brought to the whole country, but also from the peoples whose lives you've touched, who are now living both richer and more productive lives.
Yeah, see, I learned a long time ago that richness is denominated in many ways, and that financial is probably the least significant one of them. And when you put your mind towards, first and foremost, bringing benefit and value to others, whether it be your employer, your employees, your customers, and second, to learning and improving and growing and expanding your own value and your own knowledge and your own benefit, and money is not even an issue, you make a lot of money. When you're obsessed with making a lot of money for your benefit, you don't often make a lot of money.
Wow. Well, we're just about out of time, Jay. Thanks for sharing your
wisdom. Thanks, Marty. I hope this has been useful.
We'll look forward to next month talking with Jay Abraham, marketing genius with the Wizard's Edge. Thanks for listening. This is Marty Stacey. Welcome once again to the Wizard's Edge with the wizard himself, Jay Abraham. This is Marty Stacey, the consumer advocate. Jay, welcome again. It's exciting to talk to you.
Hi again, Marty. It's exciting to be here.
Let me ask you just a couple of brief questions here as we start today's tape. How long does it typically take for a customer of yours to tune in to what the Jay Abraham thought surrounding life really is? Does he typically do this in a few weeks, or does it take longer?
Marty, as you may know, I work in many, many mysterious ways. If I do it vicariously in written form, sometimes it takes somebody a few weeks or months to get acclimated because there's only one dimension. If I do it in a live encounter, we've produced profound and permanent transformation of people's perspective, achievement, passion levels, and abilities in 36 hours. I think that this particular program, The Wizard's Edge, offers two gradients. It gives me the chance to explain, articulate, illustrate, and case study example for people some very powerful ideas and concepts and show them specific applications in their lives, but also because of the wonderment of audio tape, I can use the inflections and the passions that I feel and I respect for all of my customers and people that I get a chance to help and can encourage people on another dimension. I would think in the course of this program, it would take somebody a matter of weeks. I would also say to anybody that the messages, the information, the ideas that I share on this, people should recognize this is the cumulative effect of me dedicating over 25 years of my life, redisciplining myself to think, look at opportunities, look at assets, look at all kinds of situations with a mindset perspective very different. I am basically throwing off with quick, instantaneous sort of stream of consciousness insights that are the byproduct of me mulling over issues for weeks or months. I would strongly urge anybody who is serious about putting the messages, the information, the dynamism of what I'm trying to translate and transfer to people to maximum effect to listen to these tapes more than once. It took me years and years and years and years and hours and hours and hours and hours of experimentation, of toil, of investment of time and hundreds of millions of dollars of my and my clients' capital to master the comprehensive understanding and the proficiencies that I may summarize in 2 or 3 minutes in one of these programs. There's a lot more dimension, implication, power, and potency into what I'm talking about, but I try my best to present it in its simplest, most elegant, direct essence, but I think people owe it to themselves to listen to it on many, many times before they would feel comfortable in having it integrated into their being.
You most recently have been working with kind of a new concept that you've put together. Let's talk about preeminence. How do you get preeminence in a market? How do you exercise maximum leadership?
I think you do it very, very simply by changing the whole focus of your strategy, changing who you're doing everything for, subordinating totally your own self-interest and focusing totally on the other side, and realizing that when you are in any kind of business, you have three different customers you're selling, and the last tier of customers you're selling is the man or woman who's actually conveying money to you or the business that's paying money to you. The first tier of customers you're selling is your team members. If you cannot sell them on your vision, your employees, your support people, if you can't sell them on your vision, if you can't sell them on seeing your purpose, your customers, your benefits, your advantages, your efforts in the same light, with the same objective, in the same passionate way that you do, you've lost the most critical sale that you could possibly make. The next tier is your suppliers, people who vend to you, people who deliver for you, people who sell to you, and advisors also. You've got to sell them equally as compellingly. The last tier is your customers. You have to realize all three of these critical links in the chain must be strongly welded and integrated or you lose. But the biggest single thing you've got to do is change your strategic focus.
Okay, as people are listening, this is the first time that you really have let this whole concept out. You've been working on this strategy of preeminence for how long? And you recently came back.
I've been doing it for about a year, but I've not really formally expressed it or defined it or really shared it with anybody in a concerted and a detailed manner, except an experiment I tried. I came back from Australia about 3 weeks ago. I was there for almost a month, as you know. I go over about every 18 months, and I have a group of very successful business people that I work with on about an every 18-month basis, and it's really very gratifying because they keep integrating my programming and my strategies and growing on it. We keep taking them to higher levels. In order to take them to higher levels, I got to take myself to higher levels, and so I'm constantly growing and evolving and studying and observing other people who are more successful than I. In the process of doing that, Marty, I had the chance to work with a company who had taught me lessons that humbled me. Basically, the story is very simple. They grew a company from a few million dollars to $150 million in 3 years. They did it in a way where they went from number eight in their market to preeminence, to number one. Their closest formidable competitor is one-fourth their size. They are four times the competition, the closest, largest competition size. They are 15 times more profitable. They have about three times greater loyalty and repurchase factor than anyone else in their market. And they did it by adopting a strategy of preeminence that very differently extols, advocates, and champions the role and the value and the positioning of the customer in their own eyes, in their suppliers' eyes, in their team members' eyes. I managed to trade actually $200,000 worth of consulting services to this company in exchange for the right to probingly interrogate, pick their minds, if you will, to the nth degree on all the philosophy, the strategy, the key elements, and transactional factors that made their strategy of preeminence so powerful. And I reduced it down to 42 basic elements or factors that I think apply to everybody. The process and the philosophy has incredible utility and universal implications. It can be used instantly to change the positioning of any company in any business in any industry and produce massive and almost overnight improvements. It can be used by any employer to compel and captivate their employees, team members, and vendors. It can be used by any employee to make his or her positioning within their business or company many times stronger, many times more valuable, many times more secure, and many times long-term more profitable. And it has great implications in your personal life, with your loved ones, with your children, with your charitable or causal issues and hobbies. It's a pretty powerful, although very simple to understand process.
All right, I'm thinking 42 points, and this is basically the first time you've unwrapped this.
I did. I did a very light experiment. I did three experiments in Australia, and it's singularly. I did 3 days, and this took about 90 minutes. I'll do a summarized version of it here. The average person took 10 pages of notes and told me that it singularly was the most important single breakthrough I've shared with them in 5 years. I did the same thing to one small group in a very abstract way about 2 weeks ago, and it, too, was the most talked about, the most valued, the most tangible, the most exciting element in the whole discussion.
Wow. Now, before you get started with the 42, are those broken down into any subgroupings?
No, they're all derivatives. It's all an integrated fabric. It's all basic a mindset. It's all a strategic mindset, and there are dimensions of that mindset that have explanatory and integrated purpose. And there's a lot of these points are just explanatory points that dimensionalize a point previous or following or tie something together. It's a very simple mindset. Again, I talked in one of the programs about the concept of extrapolation, the concept of interpretation, the concept of adaptation, the concept of importation, where you take an idea or a strategy and you ask yourself, how many ways can I see that applied to my business? How many ways can I take that and directly or indirectly utilize it in my life, in my job, in my dealings with other human beings? And you got to ask yourself those questions. Or what I'm going to share with you, which took this company tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of employees mobilized together, and all kinds of months and months of experimentation to perfect, will be just minimalized to your benefit unless you really put on the right kind of expansive extrapolating hat.
All right. I'm ready. I do recognize this is a challenge to, as you would say, dimensionalize this in my own life in a meaningful way.
I don't think it will be. I think when it's explained, you should, if you're willing to open your mind. You remember the opening of the old TV show, The $6 Million Man? You ever see that?
Yeah.
Remember when they had a grid where they had all these lines going up and down and moving, when they showed the operation that was going on to replace all his mangled limbs with bionic ones?
Yeah, we can remake him better than he was before.
Right. If you can think in terms of a grid as I'm talking and continuously flash between, how does that apply to me working with my either employer or employees? How does that relate to me dealing better with my and more effectively and more powerfully and more compellingly with my customers? How does that apply to me connecting better to individuals in my life, in my family? And you keep asking yourself those three questions. The people listening to this might be advised to put a pad and pencil next to them as they listen.
All right. We're ready.
Okay. I'm honor-bound not to reveal the company's name or their business for competitive purposes, because this is something they revealed to me only because I rendered an enormous service, but they mandated in writing that I couldn't reveal their name. So bear with me, and I'll try to do this. First of all, the primary basis of their entire preeminent strategy was based on a keen commitment to empathy. And empathy is understanding in a very, very compassionate and respectful role how the other side in the transaction feels, sees the situation, what their hopes, their dreams, their needs, their feelings, and their situation is, expanded far and away past the mere limitation of the singular subject transaction you might be engaging in. You should always ask for clarification if I'm confusing to you. that make sense, Marty?
Yes, it does make sense. It is not something that we often do.
Well, that's why we often don't achieve the levels of success in all aspects of our business, job, or life, because we're consumed with ourselves. But let me build on this, all right?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. This company, in every communication they have with, I'm going to fill in the blanks, the owners, in every communication they have with their staff and team, the company, in every communication they have with their customers and prospects, always sell leadership. They are not vacuous. They are not rudderless. They are not patronizing. They are not equivocating. They are not noncommittal. They sell a very definitive belief system. They sell a very strong authoritative positioning. They sell the conviction that they have a viewpoint they want to lead you to get you greater yield or greater result or greater happiness or greater fulfillment or greater protection or greater profit. They make sure that when they are communicating with a customer or prospect, the customer senses that they feel the way the customer feels. In other words, I feel the way you feel, Marty. I understand what your problems are or your challenges, your opportunities.
Can you take that out of the abstract just a little bit for me?
Okay, well, let's talk about you. If you want to talk about anybody on the phone, let's talk about somebody listening to this tape. It's going to be a man or a woman in business or getting ready to start a business or a professional who's either struggling to keep a business that may be slowing down or trending down, retrending up. It's going to be somebody who's struggling to come up with a way to make a business that in the beginning used to be fun and challenging fun again or fun for the first time. It's someone who wants to feel not out of control but in total control. It's somebody who maybe they're doing well, but they sense in the craw of their heart with a gnawing certainty that there's so much more they could be doing, so much more joy, so much more achievement, so many more people they could be impacting. Now, if I have done my job correctly, I just demonstrated to that one little utterance of paragraph words that I feel the way they feel, that I sense the way they sense. And my vision for you, the listener, is I want to be the mechanism, the vehicle, the catalyst, the torque converter that gives you the mechanism, that gives you the information, that gives you the technology to get what you need, what you want, what you deserve out of what you're doing. Do you see how I'm saying that, Marty?
All right. Yes, it makes sense.
Does that demonstrate and telegraph the empathic understanding I have for where you are?
Yes. Yes. Okay.
These people in every communication, and I use that to try to be a broad reference to whatever you do, whether you talk to people in your facility, whether you have salespeople in the field, whether you talk to people through advertisements, whether you talk to people through direct mail letters, whether you talk to people vicariously through representation that's independent, whether you talk to people on the telephone calling out or waiting for them to call in, inquiring or rendering orders. Everything these people do, and they have about 20 divisions that broach and span all those scenarios, is driven by an awareness that there's a distinct difference between giving information and giving advice. Information is non-conclusive. Advice is definitive, it's directed, it's conclusive, it's processed, it's converted to action. Telling people, here's what you should do about it, here's how you should do it and why, and being very specific is a much more powerful and compelling position to take than not basically putting your convictions on the line, by putting the onus on the person to try to figure it out for themselves, by not being conclusive. Does that make sense, Marty?
Yes, that does make sense, because in a way, I think we've habituated ourselves into just handing out information.
Well, we've gotten lazy, and we've gotten noncommittal, and we've gotten diluted, and we've gotten homogenized. We've gotten to the point where we have been afraid to take a stand. If you think in your life, the people you respect the most, the people you comfortably deal with the most, they are probably people who you trust but who are authoritative in the leadership role they take on in your life. They lead you. They tell you what you should do and why you should do it. They help you come to a equivalent conclusion by giving you facts and interpreting them for you, but they don't not tell you what they feel. They don't say, well, do whatever you think is right, Marty. Here's the options. You decide. Because that puts the onus on you, and you're not the expert. They are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And one of the reasons I respond to that is because they're so in tune with me, the empathy.
That's exactly right. The more you empathize, the more you cannot allow somebody to make a mistake. Left to their own devices without the proper advice and only abstract, non-conclusive, non-interpreted information, people can sabotage their own best interests. You owe it to them not to allow that to happen. That's a philosophy you have to integrate into your thought process. Pretty interesting stuff, isn't it?
Well, yes, I was thinking that just thinking of the empathy totally changes the way I view a prospect or a customer or a client.
Or an employee, or a spouse, or a child, or a coworker, or a neighbor, or anybody.
Yes.
It has much broader implications than just making money. Because enriching yourself and wealth and prosperity are denominated on about 7 different gradients, the least significant one of which is money. But money will always come if you understand the rest.
All right. Go on with some more.
Okay. This company felt like their paramount purpose was to help people provide themselves with focus. They felt like most people didn't have a clear picture, a definitive, dimensionalized picture of what things should look like, what their real desires were, why they wanted something, what they felt, what they were trying to achieve, why they were trying to achieve it. And they felt like the more focus they gave to people explanatorily, the more power they gave people, and people want to be empowered. They felt like focus is clarity. Clarity gives power. Power gives understanding. Understanding gives certainty. Certainty gives trust. Without trust, people won't take action. Think about that, Marty.
That's a powerful chain of events.
But it's pretty logical when you think about it.
Yes.
How many times have you ever had a gnawing uncertainty or an uncomfort or been frustrated, but not have a real clarity of what it is you want, what it is you're trying to do? You don't have to answer because it's frequent. At the training programs I do, the expensive programs, the first day I spend 4 hours forcing people to define to themselves and to others what their biggest frustrations, challenges, and opportunities are, because most of them have never put them in words. They're just sort of abstract, lingering there, and it's why they're frustrated and they don't take action on it. Then I ask them to take me on a very clear dimensional trip of what they want the picture to look like if their business was operating the way they wanted, the highest, most significant factors in existence, what they would be. Just the process of defining it, dimensionalizing it, articulating it, acknowledging it, recognizing it, and getting their hands around it changes everything.
Can you paint just a little bigger picture about how you do that so people listening to the Wizard's Edge here can do that for themselves?
Well, let's just talk about it. Keep in mind it has a lot of implications. One of the things I do, and we talked, I think, on one of these interviews about risk reversal.
Yes.
I believe that no one knows what satisfaction means to them until you help them paint a picture. No one knows the result they're really buying till you help them define it, appreciate it, and expect it, and know they deserve that and more so. I think that one of the most important things to do is you should have a vision or a wish or a hope for your customer or your employees or your vendors or your family, and that hope should be dimensionalized in very specific terms as a vision or a focused vision of what you want for them, at least as a basis you are subtly conveying to them that helps them establish a baseline of focus reflection. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It's unique, which I guess is why you're the wizard.
Well, I'm just telling you, all I'm saying is this simple. What I'm sharing with you, whether I finish it on this session or not, is the 42 success points that help somebody go from a few million dollars to 150, make 15 times more money than their competitors, be 4 times larger, and have 3 times the toehold on their customers and the loyalty and repurchase factor. So it's it's not just me. I learned it from them.
Can you explain just a little bit about if a person doesn't have a clear focus, how to get to that?
Sure. The first thing you got to do is embrace what it is you're feeling, why you're feeling it, and what you really want. Because if you don't know what you want, so I use an analogy which is pretty funny. Most people I ever advise, consult with, deal with in my training programs or meet at any kind of social events remind me of people on a cross-country trip who don't know one of two factors. They either know where they are, but they have no idea where they're trying to get to, so I can't give them direction and they can't get. It's like you saying, Jay, I'm in Albuquerque. How do I get where I'm going? And I'll say, well, where are you going? And you don't know. I can't tell you whether to go left, right, north, south, overland, through the water, or you know where you're trying to go, but you don't know where you are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you could take left turns forever.
So you got to know both pieces of the puzzle. You got to know where you are, and then you got to figure out where you want to go. And I use another example, and what I'll do if time allows in this call, I'll talk about more about the components of the optimization strategy, because the very first component in the process of developing your optimization strategy, your optimal marketing strategy, is getting a clear picture on what you want it to look like at the end. And the end isn't when you die, and the end isn't when you retire, and the end isn't when you sell your business. The end is when you achieve that goal. And it's got to be broken down not just in abstract, like I want to make $1 million, but how you're going to do it and where it's going to come from and what it's going to look like. In other words, if you know right now that you have 100 customers and each customer spends $1,000 a year with you buying two times at $500, and that makes you $100,000, and you want to make $1 million, unless you change dramatically the dynamics, the only way that can happen is if you go from 100 to 1,000. Does that make sense?
Yes,
and
you got
to know how to do it, and you got to have a plan that very specifically and very easily and very predictably gets you there. But you can't just say, I'm unhappy, I want to make more money, or I'm unfulfilled, I want to have more passion. Or you got to realize, what's it look like? What's more passion look like? Does that mean getting up at Monday morning at 6 a.m., even though you don't have to be there till 9 because you're so excited about all the opportunities and all the people? Does that mean developing a new way of looking at your relationship with customers, with your vendors, with your staff that's exciting and challenging and more purposeful? Does that mean trying new things and being a discoverer of opportunities? Does that mean working to put the interest of the other side ahead? You got to be able to dimensionalize in your own situation what the picture is going to look like. And you also have to start by acknowledging where in the world you're at now. Does that make sense?
Yes, and as we're applying this to other people, we have to kind of do that on their behalf.
That's exactly right. So you got to, it's a dual, you're having fun. It's an out-of-body experience you're conducting while you're in your body. Want me to continue?
Please.
Okay. On this concept of focus, this company I'm modeling and sharing their success secrets with and about to you, they always provide their customers and prospects with views and viewpoints those customers can absolutely trust. In other words, they never put their interest ahead of the customer. They will not sell you something it's not in your best interest. They will not sell you a version of something or more of something or less of something than you need. They always provide viewpoints and advice you can trust because it's always in your best interest. They are dedicated to helping enrich and enhance and contribute to your betterment, your prosperity, your protection, your satisfaction, your joy, your happiness, your certainty. They always are basing everything they do on standing for absolute authoritative leadership. Not condescension, not pomposity, but leadership. They see themselves as leaders. They see their function, their purpose, as to lead customers to greater results, to greater outcomes, to greater joy, to less pain, to less wastage, to more profitability, to more protection, to more satisfaction, to more productivity, to more efficiency than they allow themselves. because they know what's possible and the customer oftentimes doesn't. They believe, Marty, that most people don't trust the system, whatever the system means. In the case of a business, they don't trust the way that industry operates. They think it's manipulating them. They think they're out of control. They think they don't have a lot of choice. They think that they're, and it's very frustrating. This company takes that knowledge and they take the position that they are providing their customers and prospects with an alternative, with a blessed, refreshing, viable alternative that gives them control and power. They think that people are mad because they don't trust the system, and they don't even know they're mad. They're just frustrated and ambivalent and apathetic. They feel like they're not being told the whole truth. So these people take the position you aren't being told all the whole truth, or at least you're not being given all the options and all the factors you really should and all the information. Here's the truth as we see it, and the opportunity and the strategy we would take if we were in your shoes. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I'm trying to contextualize how that feels as a customer.
Well, I think it feels great. I mean, ask yourself this. What do you feel most frustrated about right now as a customer, Marty?
Well, that particular product I'm thinking about is not really designed for me to live with.
Okay. Like, what is it?
Well, it's my car.
Okay. But what if you were somewhere and a man said, look, what if you wanted a new car or you didn't want a new car but you couldn't stand the car you had, but you didn't want to buy a brand new one, and somebody you could develop trust for said, Marty, you don't need to buy a new car. Let me tell you what we'll do. We'll basically tolerate that car for the next 60 days. Be patient for 60 days. Don't let your emotion get the better of you, because if you do, that emotion's going to cost you $15,000 or $20,000 more than you have to spend, and you'll lose 90% of it in the first 2 days you get the car. What we'll do instead is together, every night, we'll go through the want ads. Every night, we'll identify cars that are less than 9 months old and have less than 5,000 miles, where we see people asking currently about the current depreciated price. We will non-emotionally go out and look at them and verify that, A, they have been maintained, and, B, they haven't been wrecked, and, C, that it's a good color combination and option package that is serviceable and pleasurable for you but has the highest probability of ease and expediency of resale. And then we will methodically offer those people $3,000 to $5,000 less, and we'll do it in an all-cash offer, and I will represent you so you don't get emotional, and I know, and you've got to trust me on this, but I can prove it statistically. In the course of 60 days, there will be at least 20 cars you can buy that will delight you. I will save you $20,000. You'll get the same warranty protection. You'll sacrifice 9 months on the warranty, but most of it will make us stipulate that the only car we buy will be one that already has an extended warranty that is transferable.
So you've totally empathized with my position and taken leadership and made me feel pretty good.
How would you feel in that situation?
Terrific. What's your number?
Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's easy, but it's all based on what I do is I put myself in the actual role of trying to instantly understand where you're at, what you probably do left to your own devices, why you do it, because you'd be emotionally frustrated and impetuous. I need to reassure you. I need to comfort you. I need to lead you. I need to build the strategy for you so you have a focus. I've got to tell you why you're doing it, and I've got to show you the reward for doing it.
And because your rapport or empathy is so high with me, you're able to lead. I guess thinking if I didn't know you and you had not established that rapport with me, I'd be real standoffish. But boy, when I know you have my best interest at heart, I'm in with you.
I'll be glad on another session of the Edge to do 20 or 30 minutes on rapport building.
Okay.
It's the easiest thing in the world to accomplish when your motives are correct. And your motives are definitely correct if you apply and follow and embrace the strategy I'm sharing here, because it's all externally and empathically focused.
All right.
I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm trying to serve you. I'm trying to protect you. I'm trying to bring greater value and greater result to your lives, and as long as I want that, it's not terribly hard to affect a great rapport with you, Marty. Most people don't know what focus is until they've made it. when the picture is brought into clarified dimensional focus for somebody, you'll find there is a catharsis, there's a relief, there's a refreshing, blessed power that comes to them because they finally understand. And it's no longer intimidating, discomforting, mystifying. You bring incredible power, understanding, and relief to people when you help them get a focus on something. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I don't know that I had recognized that before.
Very powerful. Think about it in your life. In the past, when any time anyone has ever helped you get a clear handle on a strategy or on a problem or on an opportunity and why and that it existed, why it existed, how it could be either removed or taken advantage of, do you ever feel how much more powerful you felt when you understood all that and when it was clarified instead of just basically being confused or abstractly queasy about it?
I always feel like I have an increase in health by about 10% better, even if I felt good to start with.
Well, I mean, whenever you bring closure to anything, most people feel great about it. When anytime anything is left with loose ends, they're normally very, very anxiety-riddled, very discomforted, very tentative. There's all kinds of loose ends in your mind, in the minds of customers and prospects and employees, about issues that have never been tightly defined and resolved, that they don't even have a picture of them. They don't even have a definition of them. They don't even understand what it is. All they understand is a feeling that's very abstract, that's not powerful or pleasurable. It's very debilitating or disempowering. You turn disempowerment to empowerment very quickly by painting clarified, focused pictures for people.
I understand. I'm absorbing this.
Okay. Connectivity is the key. You connect all the dots. You connect the current. It's like an electrical current connection. When the switch is thrown, the lights come on. Does that make sense? That metaphoric example is really what you're doing for people.
Talk about the word connectivity.
Connectivity is like if they take a child's picture connecting the dots.
Okay.
Most people's minds are a bunch of non-definitive dots. The more you connect it by drawing the lines that connect the picture that give, first of all, clarified focus and then advice and leadership-based alternative strategies they not can take, but they should take because it'll give them a greater result for themselves because the system isn't telling them the best strategy to take. The system isn't telling them all the options they have. The system isn't telling them. I mean, like what I just told you about the car. What most people would say is buy a new car. Pay $50,000 when you could buy really the same. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, I wanted to buy a Porsche automobile for my wife, and a new one was like $50,000 then. And my wife wanted to go out and buy a new one, and I said, why don't we wait? And what I did was because I knew I could find a new one with 3,000 miles on it that somebody bought that either couldn't afford the insurance or the payments, or it was not the joy they thought, or their family couldn't all get in it, or they just got married, or they lost their job, or anything else. Where that person would sell that car, it would ask what normal depreciation was, which was about $8,000, but less all the licensing and taxation fees and everything. And I found one for $15,000 less that had 3,000 miles. It was a brand new car, but she was real eager to do it. But I gave her an education. I showed her why, if I did that, I could buy her some of the other things she wanted, clothing and jewelry and trips. And so I gave her the understanding of the alternatives that she could have not only what she wanted, but more of what she wanted. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. Explain how you connected the dots in that situation.
I connected the dots by, first of all, giving her authoritative education, taking the education, telling her what the real options were that she didn't know we had available, telling her why that option was very real, proving to her that there were, in any situation, a predictable number of people in that option mode that would be eager to sell us their car, even though they were probably really eager to buy one like we were, that if we were patient and not emotional, we would have more than one car to choose from. And in the process of doing it, we would get basically a great car that, for all practicality, we wouldn't be able to tell the difference from being new except for we would have saved $10,000 or $15,000, and I showed her what that savings could be more productively but self-servingly used for in her life.
So in essence, she in a way had the potential to think this all along, but it's just that
no one had ever connected it for her.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Too many people make a critical mistake. They go right to the bottom line, and they don't help people think things through, and it doesn't work that way. Then I'm just giving you a definitive statement, not the basis behind it.
Yes, all right.
That doesn't empower you because you think there's something that you don't have the confidence and the trust that giving me the basis and going through the entire process will produce.
Yeah, I can see how a person would lose sale after sale because the dots weren't connected, even if all of the potential was there.
Well, it gets better. Let me continue. What these people felt their greatest advantage was their ability to put into words what people want and then build on them. First thing they felt they always had to do was articulate the biggest, clearest, desired result. People abstractly felt but never had clarified definition on. And then when they did that, build on that a strategy of action the people could easily take to achieve and get within their grasp that result they had always wanted but had never really recognized they wanted.
That's powerful.
Okay. They always were selling a viewpoint. A viewpoint based on a number of factors, not the least of which is you are entitled to more. There is an alternative way to do this, a different way than most everybody else in this industry or business would have you believe. You owe it to yourself to understand it. You owe it to yourself to embrace it. You owe it to yourself to give yourself or your business or your family a greater result for the same or less effort, a greater result for the same or less financial or emotional investment. We want to help you achieve that for yourself. That's very powerful.
I can see why this company had such a phenomenal result if they were able to implement this.
They always made you the customer or you the prospect the center of attention. They realized that people are always on a continuum. So they brought people into their sphere sequentially, and they kept bringing them along, knowing that different people are at different points. So I can't talk to you all in the same way. I can't assume the same thing. In this concept, in the context of empathy, I respectfully understand that you're at a different point of knowledge, of growth, of need, of intelligence, of experience, of comprehension, and I've got to deal with you at a different level, perhaps more or less sophisticated, more or less specific than I would somebody else, and my goal is to bring everybody in at their level, not the level I'm at, and lowest common denominator be down at where they are or up or where they are and build from there. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Most people don't understand any of this, Marty. This is a great lesson in how to sell also. It's a great lesson in about 57 different multi-utility tactics for building any business, any life, any relationship, any career as well. Okay, they always came from a position of hopefulness. They always genuinely had a higher and better wish for you or hope for you than you ever even had for yourself because they knew more of what was possible and they felt their purpose and their goal and their opportunity was to bring that knowledge clearly and dramatically to you.
Okay, now did they work it, and maybe I'm jumping ahead here, did they work at communicating this as well so that people knew that?
You are jumping ahead.
Okay. All right.
They always asked themselves, who are we communicating with, whether it was in a sales presentation, on a telephone call, customer service, direct mail, display ad, trade show? What problems are we going to help them deal with and solve? That was their total focus. As opposed to how are we going to sell our product? They asked themselves, how would we have the most positive impact on the people we are communicating with? We're in their home. We're on the phone. We're in their offices. They're visiting us at a trade show, having a conversation with them, dedicated to giving them information and advice, dedication and motivation to provide them with the greatest benefit until we meet again. Their focus was never themselves. It was always you, the customer.
Turn the tape over now for more of the program on Side 2.